Blog Talk Radio.
Can we have 2 a.m. conversations under the starlights, leaving all negativity at home and know that everything gonna be alright? As long as we have each other in our life, can we not label anything as ridiculous and just let our thoughts be endless? Can we manifest this moment in infinite? Enough to go around. I mentally and emotionally welcome abundance into my life. I naturally attract divine abundance into my life. I now have prosperity and abundance in all areas of my life. I now have surplus in all areas of my life. I readily accept the abundance that is my birthright. I receive more abundance each day. I receive more abundance each day, more than I can ever imagine. I see my life as it is meant to be, abundant and prosperous. I see my life as it is meant to be, abundant and vital. I welcome abundance into all areas of my life. Provides whatever abundance is appropriate for me. The unlimited abundance of the universe flows into my life every day. There is a constant stream of abundance in my life. There is great abundance in all areas of my life. There is growing abundance in every area of my life. There is immense abundance in all areas of my life. Today I bless my being with limitless abundance. Today I reclaim the abundance that is my universal birthright. Today I see and feel great abundance life has to offer. With every breath I take, I bring more and more abundance into my life.
Bring more and more abundance into my life.
But never come to the full realization of the soul inside. Being blinded by misconceptions like complexion, with the perception that we have third open eyes. I've traveled through many galaxies with the spiritual knowledge, just to let you know that you are not these physical bodies.
Being blinded by misconceptions like complexion, with the perception that we have third open eyes. I've traveled through many galaxies with the spiritual knowledge, just to let you know that you are not these physical bodies. I've traveled through many galaxies with the spiritual knowledge, just to let you know that you are not these physical bodies.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
All right, guys. Greetings, 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 everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in to another podcast of Spiritual Soul Sunday with Haru. I'm your host, Haru, the Seven Oracle. And today, guys, we're going to be, I'm going to be playing a clip of, you know, the Giants, guys, the Anunnaki, the Giants. You know, it's if you've been paying attention, you know, it's no miracle that these things are alive and well now, resurfacing, if you will. And I just want to talk about the Giants, the Lost Cities, and all of that today. But first, we're going to play a lecture. This lecture is 1 hour and 40 minutes long. That will give us about an hour and 20 minutes to discuss after. But let's go ahead and listen to this lecture, guys, and see how it sparks your remembrance. But we're talking about the Anunnaki, the Giants, guys. Just, you know, the Giants. I don't know about you, but I know with me, when I start to do research on the Giants, there is not really much research. The Nathaniel, I cannot pronounce the name. But anyway, the people as known as the Giants, you know what I'm saying, like the breed of essence of people. But I feel that there is always more to what's being told, you know. So anyhow, I can't find some of the research in which I research on the Giants, but it's like when I find good stuff, sometimes it's scrubbed, you know. So that lets me know that, you know, the good shit is being scrubbed, y'all. So we have to go within, you know. Cetius, that old crew that I used to run with, you know, she used to always say, you are the Google bar, you know. There are many gems that I still keep with me from the circles that I used to run with, you know what I mean? So we are all each other's teachers in whatever way, you know. Sometimes we are just here just for one message, and that was it, you know. I spent 2 years of my life at one place. But it was never wasted. I came for, like, one message, and that was nothing in this life is consistent, yet that has changed. You know what I mean? So anyway, guys, let's go ahead and listen to this lecture, and after this, we will be back to discuss.
Breaking the Matrix. Ladies and gentlemen, we are Breaking the Matrix with Sheldon Moore, member Zen. Very exciting. I've had Sheldon Moore on the show in the past, and people said, Rex, you've got to get Sheldon back on. The information he's presenting is amazing, and I feel the same way. You have brought us knowledge about the soul, the spirit, consciousness, higher levels of evolution that are absolutely incredible, and I want to thank you for that. And, folks, Mr. Moore is putting together a new book that will be available soon. It might already be available. I've got a link in the video description box for his previous book, Remember Zen. Awaken the Buddha Nature Within. This is also available on Kindle. I think you can pick it up for just a few bucks. My goodness, this is amazing. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Sheldon. How the heck are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely.
So I've got another presentation because I think people can learn a lot more when they actually see visuals of things as well, and you speak around the visuals. I never thought you could actually teach the Dharma through PowerPoint. I thought it was a religious thing almost, but... seems to work pretty good. So I've got quite a few slides today. So I'm going to speak a little bit quicker than I have to. I'm not on speed or something like that to speak that fast. But people are able to comprehend a lot faster than we typically speak. So I'll go through some of it very quickly. But I want to try to tie in. I know you always ask me about the kingships of the Anunnaki and some of the it goes way back. And what I've determined and the research and the documents that are out there, they point to it that been influenced by groups from afar, and they're both positive and negative. And the positive ones always come down here and try to teach us enlightenment. Negative ones come down here, whether they're mining gold or genetic manipulation or whatever, they're not really concerned about higher consciousness. I think these ancient documents and stuff have been suppressed, teachings have been suppressed. Our calendar has been completely mixed up. I want to go through the calendar. I believe it's accurate. The reason I believe it's accurate is because our history fits this calendar. This is Shirak Tishwar's calendar that he pulled out of the Laws of Manu, the Vedic document. And our history actually fits this calendar. I think it's correct. And the other reason I have so much faith in what in this group is Shirak Tishwar was one of the greatest Kriya Yoga masters that ever lived. He was the guru of Yogananda. His guru, Lahari Mahasaya, and Shirak Tishwar actually had face meetings with Babaji. Babaji appeared to these guys. So this, some people it might sound kind of spiritually hokey almost, but this lineage is full of enlightened souls. And so when they say something, it's worthwhile listening to them because this is not spiritual fluff. This is, I think what we're going to talk about today is the real stuff.
Absolutely. And real quick, before we get started, I wanted to let everybody know that this podcast was brought to you in part by Noble Gold Investments. Ladies and gentlemen, one thing that's been around since the Anunnaki is gold and silver and precious metals. Well, right now, it's easier than ever to convert your 401 or your IRA into precious metals, gold, silver. You can even do it into Bitcoin now. And if you've been tracking the cryptos, gold, silver, and what's going on around the world, a lot of people feel that is the future. Now, what's great about these guys is a lot of you out there have a 401 or an IRA just sitting there, might be doing good, it might not be doing very good at all. Well, you can take that and flip it into precious metals you can actually hold in your hand. Or you can get into cryptos, or you can get into both, anything. Just get the free books at Noble Gold Investments. Click the link in the video description box. As fast as I could, Sheldon. Rock and roll. No, these guys are great. They really are. I've got Colin on the show about every month. He is just a good dude. He is a good person, and he knows what he's talking about. They're great people over there, so I'm very happy to be a part of them. I'm very glad they're helping out the project as well. All right, Sheldon, let's rock and roll. Now, if you want to do a screen share, you can just hit the screen share button on the bottom there. Just make sure that you're sharing the screen that is the actual image, not your whole desktop. All right, perfect. You got this. Professional.
I think I got to bring it up one more. Can you see just the main page here now?
I see the main page, and I also see the slides on the left, but it looks great. So that's fine if you want to go that route.
Okay, no, I'll get the whole screen here. I'll just push it out that way. Okay. So what I said earlier is, why were our ancient calendars and teachings lost or altered? There's clear examples of that, like lots of Gnostic teachings have been pulled out. The Kalachakra Tantra, which I talk about a lot in this presentation, we only have fragments of it now, surprise, surprise. There's been a concerted effort out there to suppress this teaching. And these teachings, if you look hard enough, you actually have some real experience in this. It's pretty easy to connect the dots. So I kind of see myself as the dot connector here. Whose thumbprint is really in our past that has been doing a lot of this stuff? And in control. Like, you know, like, we really don't know that in a lot of, you talk to a lot of different people and they'll say a different group, but your external influence, and it's some of the great work that you did with Harold Clark on the Anunnaki. That was amazing stuff, by the way. I mean, we talked about that a little bit earlier. There was a group that came here a very long time ago, like 500,000 years. And there's also other groups that come, and they're positive groups, like the groups I think that Rama and Krishna were tied to, because, you know, they had different color skin. And they were positive groups, and they were coming here and teaching us enlightenment and the journey of the soul and what were our real purposes for, and Metta's teachings on how to attain our consciousness. And, but they flew in the manas as well. They had flying machines in that time, in those days. So what I'm thinking is this yuga cycle that's caused by a binary star system is that these groups come in and we're in a dark age. The positive groups seem to come in when we're more in a golden age or a crappy yuga, a silver age, or funding. So I think that some of the external influences are coming in at different times in these yuga cycles, and that's why we don't really see some of them anymore, but we have them in our past. They live amongst us in our past. And I think a lot of this is tied to the yuga cycle. Many of our ancient writings point in this direction, and if you look at some of these ancient civilizations like Sumer, Indus Valley, gods living amongst us, and even when you go into some of the Roman and Greek mythology, at some point, God appeared to actually be living with us. And though you're dealing with a negative group once somebody is one God, the big God doesn't come down here and worship him now. So I believe this whole tug of war between the light and the dark has been going on a lot longer than we think. And we've had positive and negative groups come in here. It's clearly in our literature. I think these yuga cycles determine which group gains control at which time. And this picture at the top here you can see is a famous painting. It shows the tug of war between the light and the dark, like you see in that yin and yang symbol. That's really representing the tug of war between the light and the dark. You can see in the yin and yang symbol how they start to merge. You actually get a merging of the light and the dark. I think that yin and yang symbol is actually representing our dual sun. I think it goes back a lot further. It's representing the stars. Become positive groups are bringing down to help us reach enlightenment. These negative groups seem to lack spirituality. The anonymity, how they behave, jealousy amongst them, the jealousy in groups that were probably then later. Egypt and stuff, you know, it was pretty basic. It wasn't high-minded, high-enlightened stuff, but I think it is possible that you could actually have theological advancement, your spiritual advancement lag behind that. You could just be a kind of a race, a negative race that spiritual advancement never ever comes with it. But it can go both ways. And these negative groups may have technology that actually helps the soul of the reincarnation cycle. This whole matrix thing, the moon, Saturn matrix, potentially could be real, but it's kind of a weak overlay. It doesn't have total control. To attain enlightenment, this is the techniques really well known. Most people don't take the time to practice the techniques. I had one of the viewers were complaining in my patients last 2 or 3 hours, sometimes 4 hours. How could they have any time to watch something that long? Well, you could just watch it in two parts. Well, that's pretty simple to think. But also, if you don't have time to watch a three-hour video, enlightenment, and you want to attain enlightenment, well, you're doing the wrong thing anyway. Because I'm telling you, we'll...
Just joking. But yeah, I mean, come on.
Shorten your path to enlightenment. But it doesn't make it just bang, simple, easy. You still have to do some of the techniques, but it's just about doing the right techniques. And if you understand the mechanics of enlightenment, take decades off your path to higher consciousness. So that's what this is really all about. And we can break free of that.
Come on, Percy.
Yeah, let's go. On a trip. If you book a Priceline, you can save up to...
And we can break free of that matrix. So was human evolution tampered with? You know, these Anunnaki symbols you see, I didn't put the one that has that helicopter and everything because there's a lot of controversy around that one, if it's even real or not. But you often see that there's these little flying machines in the background. And these little ones up here, I don't know if they're vimanas, but they look exactly like the vimanas you see in Hindu literature. And this typical one where the guy's a lot taller than these other people, but maybe there was genetic manipulation. Maybe we did come from somewhere else. But here's the kicker. Here's what everybody that's interested in the Anunnaki seemed to miss. And I think one of your guests was pretty close to it. It really made me sit up. I watched one of your interviews with Gerald Clark. It was just brilliant. I can't say how brilliant it was. But you and I are in Anunnaki, Rex, and we take some samples of DNA, and we get in our spaceship. I would hope we take some females with us. But say we fly off and way out into the solar system to another star system, and we take that DNA and say, you know, this works too hard. Let's make some slaves and let's so we can just sit back and you know, and enjoy our days. You know, there's advanced races that probably have that ability to do that, where they can actually, you know, genetically manipulate something and create a life form that's good for, you know, mining gold or working or whatever. I think what they can't do, and I know they can't do this, is they can't control which souls start incarnating into those life forms that they've just created. They might be able to do that with a couple, like in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, where they have the control of that. They can't do that widespread. So, you know, those souls come from anywhere, potentially in the multiverse. The soul is not just always stuck in the incarnation cycle down here. There's a lot of people down here that probably had incarnations in other spheres in the multiverse. I know a lot of people get weird with the name sphere because, you know, a lot of people want to talk about flat things now, but the universe is full of spheres. So we could make those alterations to these life forms, but we cannot control what souls go in there. The other thing that Anunnaki couldn't have done, they couldn't even really build the DNA. They just modified it. They had to have that blueprint from somewhere else. And that's creator-type stuff that, well, these groups I don't think we're really in touch with. And the other thing is this 3,600-year binary orbit that I'm going to refute in this. I think Sitchin was wrong about this. And I think the Yuga cycle that's talked about in the Laws of Manu, which is a Vedic document, is correct. And the reason why I believe that side more than this side is this was a negative group. They don't have a history of a cataclysm, big cataclysm, sort of in 3,600-year cycles. And last time, according to Sri Krishna, that our duel came in was roughly 11,500 BC, which was 13,000 years ago. You have all kinds of cataclysms that fall into that time frame.
I'm going to jump in on that note real quick, Sheldon, because there is a lot of people that feel about that time frame when there was – a lot of people feel it was a planetary flyby, but if it was the Nemesis, if it was the dark star, then that could bring a whole plethora of planets and comets and asteroids and lightning bolts. And a lot of people feel that the Grand Canyon – and the Canyonlands were created from an event that happened about that time frame as well. So it was either my thoughts, my research has led me to this. It was either that time frame or it was at 42,000 years ago at that cycle. It was either then or the cycle of about 12,000 years ago, like you just brought up. So what you just said, connecting the dots there, I think is huge because the Canyonlands and the Grand Canyon isn't a disintegration of land over hundreds of millions of years. It was a plasma event, and there's petroglyphs in Moab that show it, documented it.
And you know,
awesome. You just brought that up. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I think we have the similar type plasma events on Mars where you see those big etchings across Mars that look like somebody took a giant arc welder and went across. Those could also be caused from comets as well. But, yeah, there's something big happened about 13,000 years ago. And then you can go back sort of 40,000 because that was the other cycle. This is a repeating cycle, right?
What if Venus is the Nemesis? Sorry to interrupt.
Don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Just a thought that came to my mind there for a second. Because Venus is the eastern star.
Yeah.
Venus is Easter, Ishtar.
No, I really don't think it is because it's out there right now. I think it's out there. It's not the inner planet. And it's a separate star. It's a binary system. It's fully documented in these laws of Manu. So many of these ancient myths were likely connected to these negative beings that came. Some of them were positive, but the negative ones are probably the ones that really did genetic manipulation. And here's the other one that a lot of New Age people know. Everybody knows that, you know, we're the sixth root race. There's been... five before us, but we're moving into the fifth world, right? You've heard that, the Hopi say we're moving into the fifth world, the Tibetans, everybody knows we're moving into the fifth world. Then where did the first root race come from? It doesn't add up. It's we came from somewhere else probably, the main genetic building block of who we are. Potentially could have come from somewhere else, like Anunnaki or some other group. There's a big gap there. There's big gaps in all of our the story of human history. And if they saw themselves as gods and demanded worship, they're likely malevolent. You know, the creator of the multiverse doesn't behave that way. So they could alter that DNA, but they can't control all those souls that come in. And if they're not visible anymore, as visible anymore, is because we really are entering the next cycle. When you look at Shri Yukteswar's model, and you really realize kind of what was happening around the 2012 timeframe, he kicked over fully out of the Sandus period into Dwarpa Yuga. And when that happens, mental virtue goes from 25 to 50%. And that's what the light workers, everybody's feeling. Some people are saying it's the effects of Nibiru. It kind of is. It is effects from Arbarne, but it's still a long ways out there. Remember when we first started doing these and people would write in, well, we're seeing it right now. It's coming in for the kill shot. I had one guy write me and say, what are you going to do when it comes in for the kill shot next year and you're wrong? And I was like, well, it's not. And, you know, that was like 4 years ago that guy wrote me that little hate email. And, you know, he's not doing presentations anymore on it, but, you know, like that's the kind of thing we're seeing right now. There's a lot of spiritual fluff out there and people trying to figure this out. Maybe they jump on one thing. Well, I'm kind of jumping on one thing, but I'm jumping on here. I think it's really our real calendar. I think the great Indian calendar, it was altered as well, and I think Shri Yukteswar fixed it. He humbly fixed it, and hardly anybody listened to this guy. He's the greatest one master to ever live.
Let me ask you a question on that then, because this is important. You're talking about where we come from. And I've read The Secret Doctrine by H.P. Blavatsky, where she translated the stanzas, that she called them, and she talks about the boneless ones that came here, the original creators, the boneless ones, the formless ones. And then she talked about a superior race in physical form that was here over 18 million years ago, and she uses a lot of Eastern tradition. So I'm wondering if there's a jive there, if there's a connection.
There's total connection there. Elena Blavatsky, I always pronounce her name wrong, I think did have direct connection with the ascended masters of this planet, and they gave her a lot of information that she didn't get out of any ancient document or anything. I think if you read her writings, you won't become enlightened. She wasn't a guru or a teacher, but she was very much connected to the ascended masters of this planet. The thing you got to be careful about with a lot of her stuff, though, is the other side quickly infiltrated that group, and sort of the whole theosophy movement really kind of made a lot of fluff around a lot of this stuff and romanticized it. And now you see, you know, back in sort of 2008 when the Galactic Federation Light was coming to save everybody, every channeler was talking to a different ascended master, and many of them didn't even exist. You know, I could put the names of them up here, but, you know, it's just going to create controversy. But there's, you know, Ascended, I've got some slides that go into this, so we'll just wait till we get to the slides. But I answer this question fully in a couple more slides here. So these calendars and teachings were all altered to control us.
Now, the slides aren't moving, just so you know.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know if you were switching. You're like, oh, I thought you were switching. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just
Just so the viewers know, it's 8. We started this at 8 a.m. here. It's 9 a.m. in Rex. We usually do this late at night when we're all wide awake and stuff. So it's pretty early. That's why I'm drinking this big mug of coffee that Rex made fun of earlier.
I've got my cup of coffee here is just about the same size, man. This is like a 16-ounce mug. Freak. Extra caffeine. I was actually injecting it with caffeine. It's just caffeine. It's not even coffee, actually. It's just liquid caffeine directly from the caffeine plants.
So I think these calendars and teachings are partially altered to help keep us in this extended incarnation cycle. Because remember, why Buddha came, why Krishna came, even why Yeshua came, all these great avatars that have come in our past have come to teach us how to progress further so we can go back to the great center or return, as they say, back to the Father, or as in some Buddhist texts, return back to the Great Mother. That's the soul's journey. And, you know, if you want to keep souls in a reincarnation cycle and you build a matrix and beliefs and rigid beliefs, you can keep people in that reincarnation cycle a lot longer. And, you know, your batteries keep – you get free batteries forever if you do that, right? And then we also have these things called archons. And, you know, I don't think the archons – and the reptilians or the Anunnaki or some of these other groups were really working together. I think archonic influence comes in during the Dark Age. You know, this is the creator again. This is how the multiverse is designed for the evolution of all consciousness. And if a binary system allows consciousness to rise and fall, well, when you get that cyclic rising and falling of consciousness all the time, it grows. It's increasing. And it's like a natural protectionism as well, is that a dark age only lasts one quarter of what a golden age lasts. So when the two stars are the furthest apart, you get a dark age. And I think that's when negative influences from the multiverse can come in. And I think that's what the archons really are, is they came in during one of our dark ages. And I think as we go back into a golden age, they're not visible anymore. I don't think they literally could operate in Treta Yuga. Probably they can't even operate as we get halfway to Dwapara Yuga. I don't think they're around in those other times. I think they have to go away. And I've told people before in other interviews that the fearlessness is the best weapon against them. Is when you start living in fear and you have lots of anger and stuff, you're actually opening yourself up for possession, or I think a lot of mental illnesses might even be related to that. And if you're fearless and you're bright and you're full of love and compassion and you don't dwell on negative emotions, you're not going to be influenced by them. And that's why we have wars and we have, you know, dictators and all this other stuff, is they're working with the right people. And even if you're calm and you're at peace, they might go after somebody like a family member. So that's why some members, you know, our viewers, if you had family members who are really toxic, you know, sometimes you have to break free from that, but at least forgive them, because it might not actually be just them that's in there. They might be coming in to throw you off, but they have to use somebody else to do that. So they're kind of tricky. It's very important to know how to cross the bardo at death, and that's where I told everybody to read the Tibetan Book of the Living and the Dying by Soigul Rinpoche. That was originally written by Padmasambhava. He wrote that book and he hid it. It was hidden under a bunch of rocks or somewhere in Tibet for like 700 years. And it's how to cross the bardo in death, because the astral realm, the veil just passed life, and when you go into death, there's a bardo. It's like a lower astral, and every soul has to cross that. You know, the psalm by King David, "As I walk through the valley of death, I'll fear no evil." He's telling people how to go through the bardo, the lower bardo at death. And, you know, you have to master that. Otherwise, when you die, sometimes you can spend just as much time in the bardo as you do in corporeal form or in a body on earth. You can spend 70, 80, 100 years stuck in this bardo where you're getting your etheric energy, your soul energy is getting harvested just as much as it was when you were actually living. And the Tibetan Book of the Dead, most Rinpoches, Tibetan Rinpoches, they can pass over and cross through the bardo in 49 days into a new body. So you can go through the bardo quite quickly, or you can be stuck there forever. And that's part of breaking through the matrix. It's not just the matrix here. It's the matrix on the other side that you got to break through. And it's also important to gain control of your dreams again. I remember last time we met, you told me a pretty cool story about your astral traveling and stuff. When you start have the ability to astral travel, the gates of enlightenment are very close, because you're really in control of your subconscious. You're just essentially leaving your body. And, you know, even the Holy Quran describes how when you have dreams that you can leave your body. And you do. But are you leaving your body and coming back in the morning completely exhausted? Because if you are, you're like on a milk machine out there somewhere getting harvested again. So you've got to get in control of your dreams, your negative emotions. And these guys will have no effect on you at all. We're more powerful than they are, way more powerful than they are. The spirit is. We fall for their tricks all the time. And I think a lot of this New Age fluff that you see and aggregators saying this and that and finding new galactic friends every week and channeling somebody new every week, a lot of that's just part of the same thing to keep you off the focus. Your focus always should be, I'm going to attain enlightenment in this lifetime. Other people attain enlightenment, and you can move on in your journey. You're not stuck here anymore. The only way out of this matrix enlightenment currently. The only way. Not making this up. And I've read this quote before, but I really think, especially Vedic astrology, as we progress in this new cycle, is going to become more and more important. You know, the new rock stars in the future will be great Vedic astrologers. And this quote on the thing, it says, "Those who do not look to the stars will be lost forever unto those who fated their destiny upon them." That came from an elite banker family. Well, it sounds like a quote from Buddha or something like that. The elites have the best astrologers. They know this stuff. Their numerology and their astrology is beyond things that what we can comprehend. And the original Illuminati called themselves the Enlightened Ones. They actually have degrees of enlightenment in the original Illuminati order. I've always wondered about that. Were they originally good guys and they became infiltrated? Because that's always, you know, even the Boy Scouts has been infiltrated by these groups. Were they infiltrated and then became dirtbags later? I sometimes wonder, well, why wouldn't they give this teaching to everybody if they knew it? Because I think when the Knights Templar went to Solomon's temple and they were looking for Solomon's gold, basically, I think they found Solomon's library, and I think they found some pretty cool books. I think that this group actually knows they were actually trying to find enlightenment. And you're supposed to find enlightenment through a loving heart and be caring. I always wondered, can these negative groups experience the bliss of enlightenment still? Still be absolute dirtbags. And I used to say no, but I'm starting to think more and more yes, because some of these old guys, and I won't name their names on here, I can see kind of this glowing face that Shri Tishwar had or Yogananda had, different. One thing you'll always see different about them, I think it's the left eye. They've always got a wonky eye. You ever notice some of these elites, when they talk, one eye is like this one will be moving and one's just kind of, and I don't know if that's from possession or the left-hand path has some kind of thing that when they shift their consciousness, it's different. I don't know that. Or they could be, you know, a lot of these negative beings that have come here, they lived a long time, but some of them probably died here and they get caught in the reincarnation cycle. Just like if you and I flew over to Planet of the Way out in the middle of nowhere, we died there. Most likely be stuck in that reincarnation cycle of that system. Some of these, I think when you get a Caligula and some of these real monsters in our past, be some of these negative groups, same beings reincarnating. But I know on the other side of the spectrum, I've made a list of all of Krishna's incarnations. I never like to put it up because people will think I'm crazy, but the guy's been here a lot more than we think. They all like to see that.
That'd be a good podcast. We should do that. That'd be perfect for the Leak Project audience, I feel.
Yeah, well, I can do one like that. We'll go way, way out there. But then everybody will want to know how I knew that, and then it gets into a whole thing that I don't really want to talk about. But so I don't know if these groups were infiltrated or whatever, but there's degrees of enlightenment within the Illuminati. A royal illumination is enlightenment, and they had degrees to it. And it's just like the great Tibetan master Jay Zongkhapa wrote a book called The Stages to the Path of Enlightenment. And it's the Illuminati kind of had a similar structure within their structure. So I don't know if these guys are, some of these guys are actually Illuminati, but I've always noticed they got one wonky eye. You know, you can go look at some of these old interviews with like George Bush Sr. and stuff. There's that one wonky eye. Most of them have a wonky eye. Just start looking, start noticing when you watch some of these real dark people, and you'll see that there's always this eye that's always wonky. And I don't know if it's a possession thing or just they're using slightly different techniques because they don't have loving heart. So I don't even know if enlightenment is possible for them. But so the true story of the journey of the soul, and we are all fragments of the Creator on a grand journey back to Source. So as creation goes out, all of these life forms are out there, and they make their way back in. So that's where the great center, that's where these great avatars come from. They all say they come from the great center, beyond space, time, and false morality. So each soul progresses back to the center in its own time, though. And I think this is where the Luciferian, and I think that was turned upside down. I'm very highly likely that Lucifer is not the bad guy that we painted him out to be, because they tip things, everything upside down in our history. So you got to be really careful. But the way the Luciferian rebellion was described was Lucifer got attracted to the earth, and he wanted to kind of separate from God, and he wanted all the souls to stay down here with him and get stuck in this reincarnation cycle, kind of like a breakaway event from God, sort of. So we're not going back to the Great Center. A lot of us are stuck in our journeys here for way too long. We shouldn't have been here. At one point, a soul can move freely through the multiverse. From globe to globe, you might go, okay, I've learned my lessons here in this third dimension planet. I think I'm going to go into a fourth or fifth one next time. And I think souls used to have that ability to go more freely, and we're kind of stuck down here right now. And that's why Buddha came in. That's why Krishna came in to say, hey, people, we can get out of here. This is how you can get out of here. And that's what enlightenment is for. This is not a carrot in front of the donkey. This is real. You can attain enlightenment in one lifetime, and you can go on or you can stay down here. We're in the stream of the golden age now, so it's going to get better. It's going to take time, but it's going to get better. And when you're on this journey, the spirit gains all this consciousness, these experiences, love, and all the relationships we make. And I think when we get back to the center, we add to this universal consciousness. When I talked about my near-death experience and I kind of was heading back to the Great Center, one thing I noticed was I wasn't so much separate anymore. I felt way more connected. Like I didn't feel like an individual anymore. I felt much, much greater connection to everything. So this sort of individual person who Sheldon was much more connected. And that's, I think, what we learn in our development as we go back to the source, we add to that pool of knowledge, that pool of wisdom. And what the greater reason for that is really unknown, but I think that's what the journey of the soul is. Enlightenment is the only way to break free. So we have these negative groups, but then we have these civilizations in the Indus Valley that seem to be influenced by more benevolent avatars. It's Alarex. I've got a share screen come up here. Oh, there you are.
I'm here. While you're doing the screen share, they only see your screen anyway. Well, I'm just going to turn my screen off because they're saying that the screen is getting a little bit blurry. Bandwidth issues while you're talking. If you don't see my screen on, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yep. Hello.
So, you know, Krishna and Lakshmi came in Dwarpa Yuga, which was 3000 BC. That's 5000 years ago. It's quite a long time ago. And Rama and Sita came in Treta Yuga, which was roughly 7,000 years ago. We're talking, you know, we're going back a long time in our history. And the interesting thing about this group is they flew into the Manas. They were more concerned about humans following a higher path and attaining enlightenment. And the Bhagavad Gita, which was written by Krishna, is a detailed account of the soul's progression to enlightenment, what the soul's purpose is. What we're talking about here is really contained in the Gita, was given to Arjuna at the right in the middle of the battle of Kurukshetra, so he had to kind of get to the point real quick, and I think that's what made that document so important. But they left these teachings. One of the interesting things, though, is during the Kurukshetra War, Dwarka was attacked from space with the Manas. So who was attacking these benevolent avatars at that time? Was this the Anunnaki? Because they were, this, you know, you got to remember, Krishna came in Dwarpa Yuga, roughly the same zone we're in right now, and negative influences still can come in into a planetary system during Dwarpa Yuga. I think you really have to get full into Treta and the golden age of Satwa Yuga before some real negative beings can't come into a planetary system like that. So, you know, it's kind of interesting who were these. And this is one of the things that hasn't ever really sat me right. And I think one of the interviews you did on the Anunnaki, he was really connecting a lot of those thoughts about how these groups have come in and I think have tricked some of these avatars. Just because you've become enlightened or you're a great teacher doesn't mean you still can't be tricked by some of these groups. And, you know, you look at the burning bush in the Bible, you know, and you know, Ezekiel, but somebody came down in a flying ship in a wheel and took them away. You know, there's history of a lot of sort of these gurus and stuff being influenced. Maybe it wasn't always a positive influence. Because the interesting thing, there's a trinity in Hinduism, just like, you know, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. Well, there's Brahma, there's Shiva, and there's Vishnu in the trinity on the Vedic side of things. And in the Mahabharata and Ramayana, they mention these weapons called Brahma Shirish, astro weapon, which can destroy an entire planet. And Brahma, who is God in this mythology, controls these weapons. So you have to ask, why does God need a weapon to destroy a planet? You know, it's like, is it really God that's doing that? Like God with big G, or are these groups even potentially influenced by negative beings, or do you have to come in with one of these weapons to go onto a planet like Mars, for example, that could have been completely infested by archons and there was no hope? I don't know, but it's kind of strange that you, a creator of worlds all of a sudden needs to have a weapon like that, right? So that's the one I've always, this hasn't solved me very well, is that they had these kind of weapons.
Well, some of those weapons, even I've read through the cosmic destroyers, not only can destroy space, can destroy the planet, but can also destroy time. There's one weapon in specific. Is that the one you're referring to?
This one was more planet, but there was bigger ones in the Brahma Shrishra weapon that could destroy much more. Yeah, there was like, you know, and this is not, I don't think this is science fiction. Like, why would primitive people 7,000 years ago be writing about this? This is not science fiction. This is,
unless they were just as smart or smarter than we were. And thinking the same things and doing the same things and flying stuff and driving stuff and having technologies far beyond our wildest dreams. But no, they were in a cave and they were going, and they were like, they had these two rocks. They were like, what does this do? Oh, my goodness. That's what they want us to think. It's insane.
Yeah. And a lot of them came from, you know, imagine what we were like during the height of our last golden age. So the other interesting thing about these Vedic astronomers, they were monitoring extremely long cycles. Like a Kalpa is just one breath of Brahma. It's 4.32 billion years. That's a long time. And the Mahayuga cycle, the traditional one, which I think got altered and mixed up in the last dark age, this is what Shri Krishna said, is not 4.32 million years. But you just think about it. If you were monitoring a binary system and you wanted to know when you're in Dwapara Yuga, when you're in the dark age, when you're back into a golden age, it doesn't matter if it's a 4.32 million year cycle or a 24,000 year cycle, that race would have to live there and monitor those cycles numerous times. So you're talking hundreds of thousands or millions of years to do that. And we don't have any recorded history that does that on this planet. Not one group. You know, I think the Australian Aboriginals, you know, talk about a great race, but they've lived, that race has existed for 80,000 years now. They went around Shri Krishna's model five times. They're one of the oldest races. And they don't have a recorded history of this stuff. The only way we could know this stuff is if it came from somewhere else. It has to be an advanced race who understands star systems. You know, if you were an explorer, exploring race, you'd probably go to binary systems first because you would find life, advanced life forms potentially there soon. So, and the other interesting thing is Krishna and Rama had different skin colors. Krishna was this kind of bluish color. Rama was kind of a greenish color. Why? Rama flew in a vimana up from inner earth. They say he was actually born in Shambhala, and he flew in a flying machine up to the surface. Krishna's celestial abode, Vaikuntha, they kind of make it sound like a heaven, like a Buddhist Tushita heaven or something. But in this document, these...
Lower than low prices plus fuel points at Kroger.
Something. But in this documentation, it's a very real place. They actually say it's in the constellation Capricorn. They refer to which star it is and what the distance is in Yogins. So how can somebody from, you know, 7,000 years, 5,000 years ago know where Vaikuntha is, what star system, and how, the distance in Yogins, how far it is away? You have to have technology. You have to be an advanced race to know that. And then with the laws of Manu were about, basically the story of Manu is the Christian and Jewish story of Noah. Manu and Noah are the same people, but if the laws of Manu is a much greater document than you'll get in any Old Testament literature, and the Manu has a ruling period of 300 million years, and they incarnate on this planet sometimes, and I think they're connected not just to this planet, they're connected way, way beyond this planet, and they were flying these interplanetary bananas, and you notice how the stupas all over Asia are kind of shaped like this banana right here. But in Vedic literature, there was four types of bananas. There was two that were intracontinental, so flying within the United States, for example, or flying within Europe. One was intercontinental, so flying between South America and Australia, for example. And one was interplanetary. You know, I'm not making this up. This is in their documentation. And they used two types of fuel. One was Rasa and one was quicksilver. And I think the quicksilver was probably this interplanetary fuel. They actually have two types of fuel for these bananas.
What if it was element 115, mercury-driven? Right? So when I hear the name quicksilver, I'm immediately thinking of some type of mercury fuel.
Well, you know,
it's
some
incredible,
of those,
Sheldon.
You notice some of those Chinese sites that they found, and I think they found them somewhere else where they actually have pools of mercury, this mercury stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe they left that fuel there for their bananas in the afterlife to go on. Because, like, who would collect that much mercury to put in a tomb, right? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's kind of nasty stuff with the animals.
No, and let me add to this as well to just back up what you're saying. So if you go to Blythe, California, are geoglyphs on the ground that are over 100 feet in width. Some of them are even bigger than that. Now, there is a clear cover-up on many of these that were intentionally destroyed the 50s and beyond, not only by the military, also by local landowners, because they didn't want people to know that they had them on there, because then they might not be able to do what they want to do on their land, right? So it's like, oh, it's a protected site now because they're geoglyphs. Well, not if we cover it up somehow. Anyway, let me just add to this. Geoglyphs in the desert in California, anywhere from 1,300 to 2,000 years old is my guess. Well, there's evidence flying craft. There's areas in the middle of the desert in California that have leveled off fields similar to what you see in Peru, like the Nazca line. They look almost identical, and it's in a very similar area where there's like interesting magnetics and a lot of lava rock. The areas are similar. It's also off a 33-degree parallel, and I think they were using quicksilver and this Rasa fuel in combination with the Earth's magnetic fields, not only for navigation purposes, also maybe for propulsion purposes, and we're seeing the evidence in California. And there's a town out there, a little ghost town out there by Blake, called Inca. Whoa.
Yeah, so it's strange how there's such an effort to hide all of this stuff. It's just crazy. So everybody's heard the famous quote of the Bible, and there were giants in those days. And if you think it's kind of hokey to think that there might have been taller people on this planet at one time, you know, only 25,000 years ago, which is just a flash of time in the grand scale of things, nothing. There was Homo sapiens, who were our ancestors, Neanderthals, and Denisovans all on the planet at the same time. And there's DNA evidence now that they've interbred and everything like that. But they were three separate groups. And then you go back further, like there's Java Man and there's all these other different groups. And it makes you wonder, maybe some of these groups were like, you know, the Anunnaki doing their, oh, that one's a little too independent. Push them chase them out into the jungle and, you know, try to find another, right? It just, there's big gaps missing in this evolution, human evolution. And we had three separate groups only 25,000 years ago. Not that long ago. Giants were reported in the time of Moses, when Moses sent scouts out to Con, and they wanted to overtake that because they felt it might have been the place of the land of the milk and honey or whatever. And his people came back and said, there's giants there. We can't overtake these. They're big and they're strong. You know, King David faced the giant, which was the Nephilim. But I don't think all giants are positive negative. I think we've had both. I think the Nephilim were obviously a negative group, and I don't know if they were redhead, but the North American Indians talk about redheaded giants. They were strong and everything, but
no.
The humans, especially North American Indians, were great warriors.
Ooh. No. No.
Also mentioned in the Palisade of Tabitha. same time. Said that more people reside over there than watch over there. And some of the stuff that Nicholas Ward, which is a famous commission painter, he would definitely be awesome. I think he's probably potentially very much connected to send the pastors of his time. 1920s, they went looking for Shambhala because they say he had a piece of the Chickamauga stone. Solomon's ring was made, and the Solomon's ring was the art course of his head. He said that he kind of get a jewel cut of the Chickamauga stone, fragment of his ring, and that's a big no-no. He shouldn't have done that. I think that the piece that was left, the one that Nicholas Warwick was said to have given back to Shambhala, I think he found it. And if you read The Leaves of El Morey's Garden 1 and 2, you see that this guy, not spiritual stuff, this is one channeler, because he was channeling sometimes, send a master called El Morey. This guy wasn't channeling, this wasn't a fluff channeler, one of these new age people just trying to get their airtime on a YouTube channel. He left a real amazing body of work the world today could use to help us with the golden age. Sitting there, it's written, it's right at a website, they've left money behind. He took this piece of this Chintamani stone back to Shambhala. And they say it comes from Sirius A. It's a prime A substance. And whoever holds the Chintamani stone rules the world, and that's why the Nazis and a lot of these other groups were so interested in Tibet. A lot of people like to say the Dalai Lama colluded with Nazis. He was 6 years old at that time. You know, like some of this stuff is just so bad. He was a little child when this was good, when the Germans sent their scouts out to Tibet. See that whole story about the 7 years in Tibet? That guy was actually snooping around for that reason too. The Tibetans are very secretive about that. Very hard to get any information out of Bala from the Tibet. They're very about it. I told you before, Bama came up, flying machine from this place. I think it actually has an off-world component, as Vaikuntha, Krishna's abode, is off-world. I think some of these people were originally from somewhere else, and they've been here ever since. And in Nicholas Warwick's writing, he says the true wealth next cycle is going to come from the people of northern Shambhala. So some of these, the energy devices and stuff, probably is not going to come from off-world. It's already here. You got to be very careful about free energy. I always call these sort of new age people talking about how free energy is going to save all our problems. They're not being free in the multiverse. We have cleaner energy devices, may not burn carbon and gold and stuff like that. You've got to understand the laws of the universe. When you take something from anywhere, something has to come from, it has to come from somewhere. So even when we have cleaner, freer type energy devices, we still have to turn the lights off at night. It's coming from somewhere. It's that energy. So if it's coming from a planetary system or a sun in a different way, you still want to keep that balance natural and not. You got to be careful with the whole free energy thing, too. Just cleaner energy. See this cleaner energy. And some people claim this exists at a different Bardo or dimension. I don't know if it does, ones that are on this planet, if there's a base on this planet, because dimension very much connected to your sun. Dimension your sun is in is what dimension that planet is in. Your sun and its binary are in the dimension you're in at that time. So you very difficult to be in a third-dimensional planet and create this little dimensional basis for you in a cave somewhere or something like that. I don't know if they actually are a different dimension or not on this planet. Off-world planets could very much be, if like Dunta and stuff like that, be in very much higher dimension. I'm told once you get to the ninth dimension, the women are in control of everything from there on. That creates a lot of controversy. So,
did you want to tell you that?
No. I think Blavatsky touched on some of that. I have to do an offline interview one time, and I'll bring a friend to talk to you, Rex, and you'll see Blavatsky back. She, you know, like, I know somebody who looks at Michael same eyes, same everything. Doesn't want to be known in this incarnation. He's kind of a private person. And this last Kalki king, his name is Rudra Chakra, and there's 32 Kalki kings, and they've monitored the last 25. The last one comes out at the end of the age, being evil. So that's how the story of Shambhala goes. And that's the same as the rider on in Revelations. It's the same person as the avatar in the Vedic literature. It's all connected. All the same stuff, pulling from the same original sources. That Shambhala prophecy has an aggressive component because it's in the Kala Chakra Tantra. It's about how these 25 kings have a ruling period of 100 years. Well, the first Kalki king, Suchandra, was given the Kala Chakra king from the original Buddha. Buddha Shakyamuni, the king from Shambhala, came up 90 rishis and sat at the feet of Buddha Shakyamuni and recorded his entire teaching. There was a separate teaching there. There was a lot more teaching there than he gave the average person in the Sangha. And I think the reason for that was Buddha came right at the early days of the Dark Age, and he knew it wasn't time for the Kala Chakra to be openly taught on the surface of the planet. He kept it hidden, but he gave it to the king of Shambhala. It became an enlightened society. And this Rudra Chakra is seen as a wrathful wilderness, not coming out all loving and kind. I don't know, pissed off, and he's coming out to empty the garbage, the way that he goes. Comes with 12 divisions, warriors from northern Shambhala, and each has 12,000 soldiers, and you get that biblical number of 144,000. I know a lot of Christians think, you know, I'm it, and I don't think, you know, I think that this story came from somewhere back a lot further than you think. Carries this meteor-like sword from Ratna Maru, and this sword is given to him by Lord Shiva, and it sounds like it's beyond like a lightsaber you see in Star Wars. It's something that's very powerful that can actually balance back to a world system. So, and final battle occurs for this next epoch forms. I think that's why you're hearing the war drum beating all over the planet right now. You know, the elite are just doing everything they can possibly do to get another war going. And there's a reason for it. And everybody's heard about the four riders of the apocalypse. I like to call it the four riders of the epoch of the eclipse. And stuff comes from the Hamsa Yoga guru. His name is Gurnath. I want to mention his name because he belongs to the same lineage that Shri Krishna does. But he's living right now. You could actually go to India, sit at the feet of the great Kriya Yoga master, turn off your YouTube and all this spiritual fluff that gets created all the time, and go sit with a real master. This guy's an ascended master, I think. This group is talking about how it's also in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Two Messiah-like figures show up at the end of the age. One is a king-like figure. One is a Buddhist or teacher-like figure. This group says that one is this incarnation of the next Manu. One is the Kalki avatar, who is Krishna, who possibly is also King David, because Ezekiel clearly says that at the end of the age, God is going to send David to be the shepherd forever and ever. Three into the golden age is going to be King David, not Yeshua, not Jesus. They're different people. I really believe Jesus was not an incarnation of Krishna. Special person. It's also another ascended master, another important being. But, you know, to take your religion over there and stop trying to exalt just one of them. I think they're all important. And 2012 really marks the changing of this guard. It really started happening in 1700 when we fully left the Dark Age, went into the Sandus period. There's an overlap period between each one of these yuga cycles called the Sandus period. It lasts about 300 years. So you go from 1700 at 300 years, you get 2000, exactly, 2012. Really what 2012 is about is that we fully entered, we left the Sandus period, fully entered Dwarpa Yuga, mental virtue went from 25 to 50% just in the last, started about 300 years ago, but the big jump was really just in the last sort of decade. And that's why these, because it's affected by these two suns, it's magnetics and electrics. That's why we're seeing, I think, weather changes. That's why we're seeing more volcanoes blowing off. As you go through each one of these yuga cycles, swirl with the energy, the magnetic and electric energy, causes a swirl of chaos, affects weather, but it more importantly affects consciousness. I have to admit, consciousness is slowly going up. I know your viewers are kind of at 1 or 2%, but it, you know, I've seen a lot of real simple people starting to bigger and think bigger. It's slowly happening, but the other side is doing everything they possibly can keep us down by suppressing theological finds, suppressing religion, by suppressing teachers who can bring this stuff forward. And they're doing absolutely everything, and I think some of the, maybe even some of this spraying and stuff could be affecting natural prana, because enlightenment, you don't have a lot of natural prana in your atmosphere. Becomes very hard to become enlightened. Nature is the best guru you'll ever have, and I talk about that all the time. I think that they're trying to doing everything they can to stop it, but I actually don't think they can. I know they can't stop it. They cannot stop the golden age from occurring for their capability, really, unless they want to completely out of Brahmastra spin and blow off everything. And that's kind of a crazy way to do things. This changing of guard happens over the next sort of 700-year time frame. As we tick along into the Dwarpa Yuga, the first rider on the white horse that comes out, Kalki Krishna, turns off the guard to the future incarnation of Shri Trishra, Lahari Maasaya. Actually going to be the sixth Buddha according to these model, or according to this sect, and I think it's very true. Shri Trishwar is actually the next man. These people weren't small people. These were very important people. And they're not just trying to tag themselves into our history. They really are part of the Ascended Masters, the real ones.
Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance. It's the only paper which you need. I call it customized. This scarf. Check out this backpack I made for Marco. Only pay for what you need.
Liberty. These flaky ones that are channeled every week with different names, these are the actual ones. They always come with a female counterpart, too. So this is not just a man thing. When Krishna came, was Lakshmi. When Rama came, there was Sita. When this came, there was Marian. It's always a female component, but we love to play down the female part, because when you get into a dark age, it becomes very masculine. And with darkness, if you want ultimate darkness, you suppress the feminine. I'm not talking, a lot of people wrote in, and why, we don't need any more feminists. I'm not feminist, like a liberal, hand-hating feminist type. This is the divine feminine. And, these avatars come from the great center beyond space and time.
I'd like to add to that, because I brought this up recently, Sheldon. The old texts, whether it's the Old Testament, the New Testament, whether it's the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Nag Hammadi Scriptures, the English language even, it seems, is geared towards what you just said, the suppression of the feminine aspect of our consciousness. And it's, you know, even the way eight men, and I know that moon comes from a specific pharaoh of Egypt, might actually be Akhenaten, and I saw an incredible video yesterday that a good friend of mine sent to me on Akhenaten and Moses connections. That just blew me away. But so what we're talking about here is just so fascinating that, I mean, I love this slideshow presentation you put together also. The transition, it seems like they've, even the language is geared towards the male aspect and attempts to take away the feminine. I think it's fear.
think that the powers that be just they got scared of that feminine power, and they're like, uh-oh, they're using our physical strength.
Because it is so powerful. Like, the women are going to change this planet. I keep telling every interview I do, if there's going to be some kind of men, and there's going to be teachers coming, and a lot of them are going to be women. You know, we need women to kind of take their real place into the spiritual hierarchy again, and you know, because if you can suppress, it's like if you can suppress one side of the balance, you can have control then, right? It's like they throw everything off, and that's why they threw the divine feminine. I take it even a step further. I sometimes wonder. I think my next slide talks about it, but the return of the Great Mother. Remember when I told you I had a near-death and I was told to come back and teach and all that when I just about got there? Whoever told me that, and I think it was God, because, you know, you never know. It just could have been your dream or something like that in the death state. But it felt very masculine and it felt very God-like. But when I went out and watched the eclipse and had a shift of consciousness, I felt like it was very feminine. I was led by a mother almost. It felt more feminine. And I think that's, there is a creator, but has a masculine and a feminine aspect. And the creator is the creator. And then the great mother is the creator. And the great mother actually is the manifestation of all things. And, you know, in Hinduism and Taoism, there's visible signs of this great mother concept still. They suppressed it in those religions. They've got knocked down. But if you were kind of 900 AD time frame in China and in India, the great mother was very much visible in Buddhism. Also, there's a sect in Buddhism, the great mother sect, Buddhism, and they see the mother prepares all Christ and Buddhas for their accomplishment. But it's like their mama's voice, basically, Buddha and Christ. At the end of these cycles, the main messenger is the actual last Buddha, the fifth Buddha, Maitreya Buddha, is the actual messenger for the Great Mother. And if you look at this little figurine up here of a Buddha sitting there, he comes from the cosmic womb of the Great Mother. You see behind him there, it's kind of a dirty picture, but you see it? These sects practice, this is, you know, you can see it, right? It's a vagina, right? Like above him, right? And it's not a dirty thing. All Buddhas come from the cosmic womb of the Great Mother. And this was widely taught throughout Asia, India, and guess what? It's been suppressed a lot. If you talk to a Theravada Buddhist about this, they won't even entertain it. But the Tibetans will. The Tibetans very much see the other principle in all of this. Say the last Buddha is coming to help the lost and ignorant return back to the Eternal Mother. Well, I'm not making this up. This is in scriptures. This is documented stuff. And my question is, the Mother, Holy Spirit? Because you can blaspheme the Father, you can blaspheme the Son, but you do not dare blaspheme the Great Mother, Eternal Mother. Think that the Holy Spirit very likely could be the Eternal Mother. It's really. And look what the Dark Ones have done throughout the ages. They've suppressed the whole side. It's half of us, basically. The balance doesn't come until the balance is there. We can't go total feminine. You know, the world kind of wins, but it's the balance. The balance has to return. They keep that out of balance for a reason. Like they keep us from our past, away from these teachings. And in Buddhism, female bodhisattva, the Karas, are female bodhisattvas seen as mothers of liberation. In Tibetan Buddhism, there's 21 different types of Karas. This is what I mentioned before, is I think some of them are here right now. You probably even start interviewing them, or may already have that. They're out there, they're gonna be known. They're kind of like a Buddha. They don't go, I'm here, this is me, the great. Their arrival is like the morning dew. They just is there. and you'll have no doubt in your mind when they start to appear who they are. They have teaching, you'll just know. There'll be a lot trying to fake it, but at the end, you'll know. You'll just know. If you're a spiritual seeker, you'll know when you're sitting by the power of New Age spiritual iron. And there's a lot of them, you know. I don't really want to mention this because I've seen it all. I've seen all the crazy stuff on the internet.
Actually,
we'll call these
names out. Yeah.
You'll have so many lawsuits if I spoke my
story. Get away from
me. The funniest thing, and I always think, imagine if Buddha and Krishna and Melaripa and John Catherine and Natisha, she saw this YouTube video, they'd be just like, oh my God, the YouTube video. The woman, I saw her do one about the flat earth, so we put it in perspective. She did another one, how to remove your chakras. But like, this is the kind of stuff we're getting out there now. And she did a video on how to remove a chakra. Like, somehow this chakra thing is a bit parasitic thing. It's not. It's the natural thing. It's when a soul enters the body, the etheric bodies are powered up by the soul. So there's like a etheric overlay on a physical body. And you don't need to get rid of that. But there's actually, you could actually Google it on YouTube and watch a video of the remove a chakra. I've seen it here. There's a lot of crazy stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just want to say real quick, I know there's a lot of people that are talking about removing their chakras, and first of all, if it can even be done, I don't know, but second of all, if it could be done, probably don't want to do it. How about just make your chakras healthy? Because that is in my opinion, I mean, I've seen Korean photography, I've seen images of my own chakra systems, and I've seen my own aura, and I've seen my friends, and they're very real. To take that connection, to me, it's like, oh, let's remove part of your brain because you don't like the way you think. Or doctors that say, oh, yeah, you're overweight, you're eating too much. Let's take part of your stomach out. Or let's put a lap band on you or something like that. It's just, it's illogical. It doesn't make sense.
Remove one leg and one arm so you're balanced better.
Yeah, there you go. How about that? No thanks. Like you.
Well, this is my warning to the viewers. Don't remove your chakras. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And hopefully I can make people understand that a little bit better. And there's a couple more slides down here. So balance will return in this next cycle. It's happening already. You know, you look at what's going on in Hong Kong and stuff. That's what you need to do in America or if with the Epstein and stuff disappearing. When these things get so ridiculous, a million people should be marching on the Capitol saying, enough. And, you know, those people in Hong Kong, they don't realize it, but they're in great danger. Like the Chinese, the mainland communists, they could very well go in there and be very harsh because they don't want that to extrapolate all across China, right? But you're going to see more and more of this type of stuff where people are just standing up and saying, no more. But you still have to focus on enlightenment, but you can participate in this change peacefully, but everybody has to grow a pair and go out and do something when something like this happens. You really hate something your government's doing? Start protesting more. Don't just sit there and go on YouTube and watch all of these people talking doom all the time. Actually do something like the Hong Kong people are doing. That's how change has to happen too. It just doesn't come from hugging and loving each other and everybody being enlightened.
Well, you know what, though, Sheldon, at the same time, you got to be real smart because oftentimes that's what certain influences try to do is get you to protest, and then they can use that against you. So be very careful because protesting now isn't anything like what it used to be. I mean, you've got so many more opportunities now to be so much more effective in a peaceful fashion that can be effective. And there's a video that I remember from 30, 40 years ago where there was when the Soviet Union was extremely powerful and they were usurping up the nations within their borders. I don't remember this specific nation. They were a peaceful nation. They weren't allowed and wanted to go into this country, and they all went outside, all of them, outside of their houses and stood there. And then they started dancing, and the tankers didn't know what to do. Because they all did. It wasn't just one house. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just one street. All of them went out. And then, literally, I remember seeing the looks on these Russian tankers. They're like, what the hell do we do? Guess what? They left. It worked. It's incredible. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen on this. It was amazing.
But, yeah, so this change, this, because, you know, we went into Dwarf Yuga, so consciousness is being affected positively from that. That's the change, I think, that every light worker and everybody watching this, what do we call these, webinars, seminars, podcasts? Watching this podcast right now are more than likely watching this because they're interested in this. They want to know this. They want to know the deeper side. And they feel it. They feel the energy. Something is changing. And one of your viewers, I won't say her name, but she's a really great girl. All she's doing is filming the clouds and stuff. She's seeing, and I see it all the time too, like, wake up, people. The sun is changing. When you see a rainbow, the purple hue on the bottom of the rainbow is much different than it was 20, 30 years ago. The cloud form, like, it's changing. There's a change happening right now. It's subtle. It takes time. It's not just like that. And that's what everybody's picking up on. That's what everybody's looking right now, because human mental virtue went from 25% just in the last couple of decades. It really started 700 years ago, but the big, when we fully left Sandus period, happened in, I believe, 2012. So there are a group of ascended masters who watch over this planet, and I think this is the creator's way of, when systems get stuck in their evolution, higher beings, because an avatar doesn't ascend here, they descend here. They come from a perfect state of Bodhi, come down into a planetary system. It's not a good trip for most of them. They come from a very higher, beautiful place down here to help us. We usually nail them to crosses, set them on fire, alter their teachings, do everything we can to destroy what they brought, but we just didn't destroy it enough. And I think that the dark ones are just going to literally get overwhelmed with the wave of Turcons. Turcon in Tibet is somebody which Padma Sambhava said that will reveal these hidden teachings. And you're going to see more and more Turcons appear who reveal. They won't necessarily dig up a book like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and then retranslate like Sogo Rinpoche did. They will actually, it'll just be in their soul. They'll come, they will learn their lessons just like any other master has or any other teacher, and they will bring these teachings forward. That's going to happen more and more and more. And I really look forward to seeing what these Taras do, what kind of teachings they bring forward. It's going to be nice to see that balance. And they aid, these ascended masters aid in the evolution of human consciousness. And when required, they take on an avatar form and they descend into a planetary system to restore dharma, or sometimes like the Kelpie Avatar, or the Rigjin Jiepo, or the Buddha Chokrin, the last king that comes out of Shaw, they're all the same person. That person is a redeemer. That person carries a sword, might have a teaching, but he's that person's not going to hug the Dark One to enlighten him. Probably going to just literally remove him. Sounds kind of harsh, but I think that's what will actually happen when this finally occurs. And here's a really important thing to understand. Please, I hope people listen to this one. They rarely communicate through channeling. They must incarnate. If they have a teaching to give, they must incarnate and come down here and give that teaching. There's one lady who's claiming for years she's channeling Shakyamuni Buddha and Maitreya Buddha. She's literally written more stuff than all the sutras combined. It's just a lot of just fluff. It's some good stuff. But I really doubt that this lady is channeling the ascended master. And you also see there's way more ascended masters now, you know, during the sort of 2008 to before 2012, and everybody was channeling, and well, every day there was a new ascended master. I would just read this stuff. Oh, my goodness. Stop doing that. You know, like, if you're misleading people at the changing of the yuga cycle, and you're just for fame or to get on a whatever your reason is, ego, narcissistic, whatever, you're creating karma for yourself. It's going to take thousands of lifetimes to get it. The truth. Tell your truth. If you know your truth, tell it. But, you know, these great teachings didn't come from channelers. They came from avatars and came here in physical form and gave them. So be careful with channeling the game. Everybody has that capability, but those teachers will actually have to incarnate and hear and come from their lips. The original teachings were often restructured into religions. How goofy some religions are. Like, if you really go into the Gnostic teachings of Jesus and the original teachings, it's way, way different than what ended up with. Just a second, I got a chat.
Gentlemen, just wait for it and talk about it. What's amazing about this conversation is all the synchronicities that I'm having with what you're discussing and the knowledge that I have obtained just past 8 hours. What you're talking about, actually a lot of it, bits and pieces were referred to in a podcast that I was linked to watch on yesterday. I didn't watch, I listened to it in the drive. And so much of what you're talking about connects with that. This is incredible. I mean, speaking of Matrix keys and Ascended Masters, wouldn't surprise me if they are the ones that oftentimes influence us to do things, say, wow, that was a Matrix thing. I forgot to tell you this. Yesterday, I was on the road, I'm thinking about you. I'm like, okay, I wonder when Sheldon's going to get back to me. We were going to do an interview. I'm driving on the road at the exact time that I'm thinking that. He sent me an email because 20 minutes later I go to get fuel, and I looked at the timestamp you sent me that email, and I said, dude, that's the exact time. I mean, the way that I was,
I've never felt so close to the possibility of disclosure. The Nephilim, the Giants.
You can't bet. Dude, that's the exact time. I mean, the way that I was thinking about it, I was like, weird connection. I have been literally getting into people's heads lately, or they've been getting into my heads, because the exact time that I think about them, they get in touch with me or something weird. I mean, it's beyond coincidence now. Everybody has that once in a while where you get a phone call from somebody you haven't heard from in 15 years or whatever. But it's happening daily, dude. It's really cool. Anyway.
That happens to me all the time. I can think of one brother, and bang, you'll phone me. And so I can really save on long-distance calls. I just have to think about them and then wait till they call.
It's working out because he's getting the bill.
This white brotherhood / sisterhood, was always called the white brotherhood. It's really white brotherhood, sisterhood, like playing the feminine in the game. Are a group of incarnates that are on this earth. They're coming back, and until they go to Parinirvana, which is to the great center, they just keep coming back to help. Some of them have come back a lot, and that's what a bodhisattva is. Somebody who can attain enlightenment in this lifetime, but they don't leave because there's still other people back there that haven't attained. That's a pretty special thing, really. And they have a connection to these elders of Shambhala. And it's also connected to the Sirius star system. They say there's a Blue Lodge, and I know the Illuminati are connected, try to have a connection with the Blue Lodge, so I'm kind of careful saying this. But apparently there's a Blue Lodge in the Sirius star system where the higher beings of this galaxy, I guess, would reside. And white brotherhood on Earth is very much connected to them. I even heard the white brotherhood was originally started from Jason Kappa, that Tibetan monk that I told you about in the last podcast. That in a previous life, he gave Buddha these crystal rosary beads, and then Buddha sent the long walker to Tibet to bury that conch shell. 7 years later, the guy, Song Kappa, when he built his monastery and got in and digged up this conch shell that Buddha sent him, he's apparently the founder of the White Brotherhood and has a disconnection to Shambhala. And they watch over the currents of the world. And when a certain message has to be delivered, they'll incarnate and deliver it. And I think some have been misled by malevolent forces. So just because you attain enlightenment doesn't mean you know all of a sudden know everything and can't be misled. it could still happen. And you know, like when you think about, like in Abraham, you know, kill your son. Do you really think God would tell prophets to kill his son just to test his faith? I don't think so. The burning bush, the Ezekiel getting taken off in a wheel. I think that we've been played. The descendant masters, in, well incarnated, or a Tara, can be played by dark forces still. We're not totally immune to it yet. And, this ascended master group was heavily romanticized by Theosophy. From basically after the time of Blavatsky, Theosophy was infiltrated by the dark ones. It just went crazy. Still is. There's a lot of... You got to be really careful. If you want to start reading about Maitreya Buddha, you're going to get swept up into all these Theosophy sites that are just giving you all the wrong information. And then the New Age movements, you know, like, you know, back in the day when everybody was channeling and the Galactic Federation Light was going to save the planet, there was new Ascended Masters every week by one of these channels. And that just shouldn't be happening. But it is part of, it's just part of Maya, it's part of the confusion, the illusion that's in this world system. So this is where I'm going to try to tie everything in together. These ancients knew that the electric and magnetic effects of heavenly bodies sitting out there in the multiverse affects human consciousness. And, you know, basic Vedic and Western astrology is based on the electrical effects of the cosmos and how that affects each human. So the moon, the planets, the stars, the constellations all influence the human condition. And you know, it's subtle, like if you're a Scorpio versus a Virgo, those influences are subtle, but they're there every, they're still there. They very much make up who you are as a being. That's why I think Vedic astrology is going to be really important in the coming years. Not just to figure out what kind of day you had, but figure out, you know, when's a good time to start a business, when's a good time for spiritual practice, when, you know, all those other things that are important. And the other interesting thing about the yuga cycle is cyclic. It repeats. It repeats in an exact pattern of 3-2-1 ratio. So that means is that the golden age is 4 times longer than what a dark age is. The silver age, Kali Yuga, is 3 times longer than the dark age. And then Kali Yuga is twice as long as the dark age. That pattern repeats and it repeats and it repeats. So here's where you got to put on your thinking cap. No local star movement, because stars, like our sun, moves amongst with other stars in its locality, right? And it also moves with the whole galaxy that takes 250 million years just to make one spin. So there's all this motion. There's no repeating pattern in those motions. Well, there is with a galaxy, but that's 250 million years, much bigger. That causes something like the precession of the equinox or causes these within these binary star systems. The only way you can get that repeating pattern in the cosmos, if you are in a binary star system, there is no other way the cycle works within a binary star system. Here we have an ancient document which Titian brought to the world that there's a 3,600-year orbit. In the laws of Manu, which is another Vedic document, and the Manu is that celestial king that rules for 300 million years, fully describes a binary star system with a 24,000-year orbit. It's tied to the precession of the equinox. You know, a lot of people go, well, with science, when we calculated that the precession was 5,200 years or 25,900 years, they did it. They measured the precession over a 30-year period. Used a supercomputer to calculate most of it. Problem is, binary system doesn't stay at the same speed. It doesn't just sit there like that. They come into perihelion, they speed up, and then as they go to aphelion, they slow down. So it's kind of, for whatever modeling you're doing, supercomputers, and if this is really is a binary star system, it's not going to work. You're not going to get the right number. Other problem is I don't think it's 24,000 with 3 zeros. That's just too, could be, I don't think it is. It's probably 24,142 years or 24,118 years, something like that. Same with this Stitchin model. Stitchin, I always want to call him Stitchin, but Stitchin's model is correct. It's 3,600 years. So probably not 3,600 with 2 zeros. These are probably more like an approximation.
Yeah. And I want to jump in on that because the Adam and Eve story by Chan Thomas, it was a research essay that was put together by probably an alphabet agency before it was even formed. And it recently became declassified at the CIA.gov/vault website. And Chan Thomas has done an exceptional job putting together geographic, geological evidence for these cataclysms. And he shows the evidence that being almost every approximately 6,000 or so years. So that could be one of the cycles within the cycles. And I think that we could be entering a 40-something thousand-year cycle right now. But I just want to make one comment with the supercomputer you brought up and the 24,000 years versus 25,168. You have scientists that are, or astronomers or, you know, how do I put this? Educationals, we'll call them educationals, that are funded by certain groups, individuals that have certain agendas. How easy is it to add an extra 1,000 years, attempt to debunk the whole thing? Well, they said 24,000 years, and this is 25,168, so they're totally wrong. And we're scientists, so shut up.
That's a really good point, but that probably is what's actually happening. Troll us off some more, right? Here's the most important thing is both the ancient Vedic astrologers and the Kalachakra astrologers tracked the moon's nodal, the north and the south. Like this is the moon, the point on the top and the nodal point on the bottom, called Rahu and Ketu in Vedic astrology. Other reasons for tracking them, but when the sun arcs through above or below, that's when the lunar eclipses that are going to occur. They were tracking these two points primarily spiritual purposes. Getting some arguments with some Vedic astrologers have written in, like, oh, look at this more. You've got to look at this more because you're only doing Vedic astrology telling people how their day and their month and their week's going to be. You haven't looked at the spiritual aspects of Vedic astrology at all. We're not doing that whole study of work any justice. Think this is just fluff, and you call yourself an astrologer? Wake up! Vedic astrology is more about spirituality, attaining higher consciousness, than recognizing the patterns and how it's going to influence your day or your week or your month. Very important to understand this. And we're tracking those nodal points for spiritual purposes. Now, we're going to go into the next part. Now, if you believe that cosmos and constellation, stars, planets, moon, affect who you are. That's why they always ask you when you're on Earth. Oh, that affects you. Anybody who's got a higher mind and higher sense of it. Now you have this Jupiter cycle. The way you occur in the binary system is the only way you can have it repeat and repeat exactly. Something like that. That's your 80% of all star systems are binary. It could also be a trinary. A 3600 year one in there too, another 12. The reason I don't think it's there